Screen Divers. In this week's episode, we are talking about 1992 Universal Soldier. This movie is directed by Ronald Emmerich. It's written by Richard Rothstein and Dean Devlin. Produced by Alan Shapiro. Starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren, Michael B. No, it's not Michael B. Jordan.
Michael J. White.
Michael J. White.
Yeah.
Ali Walker, Etta Ross, and Jerry Orbach. Cinematography by Carl Walter Lindelob. Edited by Michael J. Duthie. And music by Christopher Franke. This movie is produced by the legendary Carolco Pictures, and it's distributed by TriStar Pictures. This movie was released on July 10th, 1992. It has a running time of 102 minutes, and it was made allegedly for $23 million, and it raked $120 million at the box office. How are you guys?
I am fine. I'm back from my slight holiday.
What was the occasion?
That was my 50th.
50?
What?
Yeah. That's a response from most of the fans from the various bands.
How do you feel? How do you feel? The big number.
I feel like I'm still 28.
Yeah. Delusional, basically. Yeah.
Let's dance in style. Let's dance for a while. Haven't come wait. We're only watching the skies. Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not? Let us die young or let us live forever. We don't have the power, but we never say never. Sitting in a sandpit, life is a short trip. The music's for the sad man.
He just lost 25 years.
Still got all my hair.
Maybe
a bit grey.
So, this week, dear listeners, we are bringing you a take on Universal Soldier. It was a toss-up between Bullet Train and Universal Soldier. Both of these movies, at some point, have been favorites of someone who's just turned 50. So, as a gift, we decided to talk about these movies.
I wouldn't say favorite, this one. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, I guess. To a certain extent. I don't know. I think this movie dated when it was released. it's interesting. I, on a different note, because I know we're gonna trash this one, but this movie looks way better than I expected.
Yeah,
that's the thing. What do you think, Ricky? A quintessential question must be asked, Ricky. What's this movie about?
This movie is about zombie, cyborgs, military-based, and remembering trauma.
Yeah, are you referring to the first time we watched this, or just...
I did love the over-explanation of the traumatic incidents that they were reliving day by day. It's... That was a good information dump going on halfway through the... No, not even halfway through the film. Almost three-quarters of the way through the film.
You know what this is? It's like they put Starman by John Carpenter, Platoon, Terminator 2, and a bunch of other shit into a blender in 1992. And here comes out Universal Soldier.
Yeah, pretty much.
When was T2 released, guys? Was it 91, 92?
95.
Huh?
95?
No. No.
I was 15, so same year, 1992.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start.
Well, start with Vietnam. Let's start with Vietnam.
You want to start with Vietnam?
What, you mean what they say is Vietnam, which it turns out to be a golf course in Arizona.
Vietnam. That's exactly where all of Vietnam happened.
You're joking.
No, I'm not.
Because I was transported to Vietnam, dude.
Yeah.
Were you?
And I'm disappointed by the lack of credence. What a wasted opportunity. What a wasted opportunity. I am glancing at another screen because I thought it was ideal to drop quotes from this movie. Because some of the dialogue is, how can I put it? It was amusing, but then there's so much what the fuck in it.
I don't know. Are we having fun yet?
I mean, Ricky, gratuitous shots of men's butts in the moonlight.
Remember that this was somebody's pick this week. This had nothing to do with me.
This was not a Caligula.
Where I enjoy the man's anus from behind. This was just a man's anus just standing there without any movement or gyration or anything. So I'm afraid that no, not even I could adore the male form in this film.
All right, let's talk about the protagonist of this movie. So Jean-Claude Van Damme plays someone who's 50 years old, someone who's been...
Well, technically 25.
Yeah, well, cryogenically frozen.
Yeah,
put on ice. What type of stasis? Did they bring him back? Was he dead? Like, did they freeze him?
He's a zombie.
He was dead.
He's a zombie, basically, right? Yeah.
So they've injected him full of chemicals, made their hearts and their bodies speed up and heal quicker. And yet, one of the drawbacks about this is they run hot.
They get hot.
They get hot.
That's one of our Luke Devereaux, okay, that's his name. And then we have Sergeant Scott, played by Dolph Lundgren. Mm. Alia Walker plays Veronica, who's an avid chain smoker. And depending on how the light in this movie hits her, she has a tendency to look either really old and haggard or good looking. I don't know, it's just fucking bizarre. But smoking is bad for you, and I'm saying that. I'm still battling with quitting, but this movie may have helped.
Pushed you over the edge now. You're just going to slow it down.
You can actually see that this is one of the few movies where a protagonist that is smoking is actually a smoker. Like, yeah. she was definitely a smoker. I would be curious to look for some factoids about this, but she's not acting smoking. She's smoking. It feels like she's a real smoker. And I'm not, praising her performance, but... If anything, she's possibly the best actor in this, her and Etta Ross. Now, for people that don't remember Etta Ross is a Carolco darling. He's been in movies with Schwarzenegger, he's been 10,000 action movies, and when you see him, you'll definitely know who he is. But more recently, and by recently I mean over 20 years ago, you may remember him in a very seminal TV show written by Larry David called Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he's in my fucking favorite episode. The episode in question, or Curb Your Enthusiasm, is about a tiff or I think it's the first time that Ted Danson and Larry David really clash on screen. And the entire fight that they have is about a sandwich. And it's fucking hilarious. But it's if you remember this episode, you remember Edda Ross. Obviously, this is an older Edda Ross, but I think he was in Red Heat as well.
He was also in 6 Feet Under. He played Nikolai, who dated Ruth very shortly after the patriarch of the family's death. And basically is the first suitor of Ruth, the mother, the matriarch of the family. And he is, again, a Bolshevik Russian immigrant American.
There you go. I mean, it must be part of his heritage for sure, because he plays those characters so well. But he's memorable. That's the thing about him. Jerry Auerbach as well is someone that you will remember. This is on ADTV's darling. You know, he's appeared in 10,000 procedural shows, even in the 90s. He plays the Doctor, who appears in the third act of this movie out of nowhere. There are a lot of character actors peppered through this that have populated the 80s and the 90s. And even if this is a 90s movie, I uttered something while we were watching this. And it's another case of a movie that was definitely written in the 80s, ended up in development hell for some reason, and then got made in the 90s. Some of the action sequences in this are actually very good. There's a ton of practical effects. There's a lot of... The movie technically is it's forgettable.
Look, when I think this has been another movie where my nostalgia goggles going into this was, hey, yeah, Universal Soldier, great, and coming out of it was like, great, amazing. I'm so happy I put myself through that. By the way, twice. I fell asleep last night watching it, and then had to rewatch the last hour of it.
When did you fall asleep?
I fell asleep when they got out of the motel. So when when they invaded the lover's bed and shoved a gun in his face from under the covers, which was an amusing scene.
It was amusing, but also I forgot about that sequence. And when the gun comes up from under the covers, I thought, is this guy going to take his own life because he's seen this? As you would. If you were in a motel and Jean-Claude Van Damme burst from one wall and then exited through the other like the fucking Kool-Aid man.
And again. And again. And again.
And again until he hits a brick wall, literally.
There's an interesting fact about that hotel. It was actually made for the movie.
Well, the entire thing is a fucking set?
Yeah, it was a complete set.
Because they blew it up at the end, no?
They put so much fire, basically... shots and fire into that. They just had basically tear it completely apart.
The motel didn't blow up, but they did drive like a car through it, and it was completely riddled with bullets and things barely hanging together.
Kind of also, the run in the classic car, which, by the way, shame on me for not looking this up. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, all right.
I think we've seen that classic car. I think it was red and white.
Yeah,
in the Sixth Day.
We probably saw that classic car in Independence Day, which is another Roland Emmerich
film. You're joking.
Probably.
So, you know, Roland wasn't originally set to direct this movie.
Who was set to direct it?
Did you call him Roland? Like, is your pal?
No.
Mr. Emmerich.
Roly.
So it was a guy who directed Under Siege.
Oh my god!
Yeah, he was the original director, and it turns out, going from two Steven Seagal movies.
Hey, that movie was a hit, man. Erika Eleniak comes out of a cake in that, doesn't she?
Yeah,
was that Erika Eleniak?
I think so. Somebody of that time period. Who
went to the movies to watch that on a double bill with The Mask.
Wow.
Which one left a lasting impression on your brain?
Both of them.
Oh my god. But he was originally set to direct it and had some problems. Basically he said that there was budgetary issues and other stuff, and Roland Emmerich was working on the ill-fated Isobar. Do you know about Isobar? Because I went into a complete fucking deep dive on this.
What is Isobar?
It was an a movie with Sylvester Stallone, which never got made. And he was tagged as Alien on a Train.
I wonder.
Yeah. And it was Ridley Scott was originally set to direct it.
This motherfucking alien on this motherfucking train.
Yeah. And I've just, this morning I went for a complete deep dive on this. And
you really got too much time on your hands.
Too much time. But like completely bizarre. But yeah.
The car. The car. It's a 1956 Buick Special.
Robust.
And on that note, this windows. Was Umba.
So, Jerry Orbach, is that his name?
Yes.
Jerry Orbach?
Yeah.
I am so glad that he had more of a career than this. I am so glad that he was in Law and Order. I am so glad he was the voice of Lumiere in Beauty and the Beast, because he wasn't getting royalties from this movie.
Hey, you know what? This was a success, though. That's
it
the thing.
It was a success.
It's a mark, like it's a high watermark, skid mark, of the type of movies that we made in the 90s. You know, but the problem is this rode the success of T2, and you know, it got critically banned because of it as well.
I think it came out before T2, or
same year, man. Same year. And it was actually criticized as a T2 clone.
It was made the same year as T2, but it got released the following year. And the person who was the executive producer of it was the executive producer of T2, was the executive producer of Total Recall, was the executive producer of Rambo 1, 2, and 3, or First Blood, Rambo 2, Rambo 3.
It's Cargo, isn't it? So
it's a Kessler, or whatever his name is.
Yes. Yeah. So basically,
what's
it was
his name?
Mario Kessler.
Mario Kessler is one of the. He was one of the owners of Caracco, right?
Yep. And Caracco was basically they could make money. They literally just had
this
to say,
is the type of movies I made. This action.
They literally said names, and they said, like, maybe one-line concepts, and people would be like, money. And this is what Mario was known for. He was known that he could just literally go to anybody and say, I'm going to put this movie together, and they go, here's the money. And that's all he did during the 80s and 90s, and which is why we do have Universal Soldier and Basic Instinct. So
look, you can also say this movie was completely aiming at teenagers. Like, a young man, it's that type of thing. For sure. You know, I think the demographic now is much wider for action movies, but this one in particular, because in this one as well, I wonder if they tried to sell toys here, because they look like action figures. Like you could argue that Stallone and Arnie did on those bases, but they didn't. They felt larger than life. But these two here, they look like toys. They look like action figures. Even the costume design of their uniforms, everyone's wearing this ill-fitting kind of, I don't know, man. They just look like toys to me all the way through the movie. Some of the dialogue is fucking, I don't even know how. It's funny, but the juxtaposition of some of the shots, it's also so bizarre. I laughed out loud. Like, there's one of the moments in the between Veronica and Luke. Actually, let's go back, man. Let's go back to because even before we get there, the first time I laughed out loud, I went, "Is he been pushing this stuff for a day?" Because there's a moment in which you see Jean-Claude Van Damme pushing this car, and you see the speedometer going up to 30 miles an hour, but the car is obviously not doing 30 miles an hour. It's just, and I thought, what the fuck is going on here? And then it kind of fades to the next scene, or there's a transition, and we get titling of the screen of time passing. And it's like a day passed or something. So it's been pushing a car for several hours, to the point that it gets reinforced by the dialogue right after, because when Veronica comes out of the car, she goes to him, "Are you okay? You've been pushing this for a long time." It's fucking, it's just, Also, some of the framing. I understand Van Damme was naked, but do you have to place the Veronica's character on the ground behind him as she's looking for a tracking device?
Yeah,
she was doing a Rocky.
But she's basically at sack level. She's a fucking scrotum level.
Or small sock level.
It's like, you got to look for something. Look for what? Look for something hard. Like, this stuff, like, yeah. It's a... It's...
Oh, come on, man. Not this again, huh? Is this necessary? Oh, could you at least leave your pants on this time? Huh. Great. Just great.
There must be a tracking device on me.
Well, what do you want me to do about it?
Look for something unusual. Something hard.
There's so much about this film that they didn't actually know what they were going for. Everything in the motel's hilarious. It's all stick. It's all almost like Rodney Dangerfield.
But it is recycled from Commando, right? Fighting Commando, which was way better.
But like, at the same time, like, everything that Ali Walker's saying and everything that's going on behind the desk, you know, it's all like a Rodney Dangerfield film. You know, it's just silly stick and silly, like...
Did you do, like, a tuba sound earlier? What did?
Yeah, because what I said rusty trombone.
Can I hear your tuba? No, it's Steve, can you give us your tuba, please? Sounds like a euphemism.
But so everything the old lady says, even after the devastation, she goes... $20 deposit, huh? And they don't know what this film was meant to be. They wanted to aim this at a market that they already had. They already knew that Jean-Claude Van Damme on a poster, Dolph Lundgren on a poster. This was post Rocky IV, so everybody knew Dolph Lundgren as the Red Machine. Mm-hmm. You know, they just knew that it would sell. I did have a quick look, and yes, they did make action figures at the time.
They did?
Yep.
Of course they did.
And the company says Blitzway collaborating with Higher Toys at a 12th of a scale model for Luke. So.
But there's, like, again, the dialogue, you know, some of the quotes right before. Let's jump around because it really doesn't matter. It's not rocket science. This movie's like... It's as linear as they get.
Okay, three favorite quotes, then? All of us, three favorite quotes?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll start, all right? I think the final one...
We go round robin, one each, yeah?
So it's the last, one of the last... I mean, it's not the last line, because the last line after this movie is the reason why we did this today, all right? Because it's the closer. There's an alternative ending, but I don't even recommend for listeners to go seek it. It's on YouTube. Just watch the original
ending.
I thought he was really.
I
well
didn't
done.
Watch the alternative ending.
Oh, I did.
I
you
did.
As
well.
Oh my god.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
Well, point of the matter is, we did, so you don't have to. Theater of the mind. Ricky's gonna tell you. Talking to you, listener. I'm talking to you. So, it's what GR44, aka Luke Devereaux, utters. That's my first one. At the end, right before he dispatches. Dolph Lundgren, you're discharged. I can't do it like fucking. I wouldn't dare to do it like Arnie though.
You're discharged, Sarge.
Fuck, it's a mouthful. It's a fucking mouthful.
Discharged, Sarge.
They even take the piss of his accent in this.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was mine.
Next? That's number one. Okay, Steve, what's your first one that you want to shoot out there?
Oh god. You dead, soldier? No, I'm alive.
Jesus Christ. Ricky.
I'm all ears.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Okay, I got another one. It's Veronica's exchange between Veronica and Luke in another sequence. She goes, I figure you had to be French or something because of your accent. What accent? What?
Okay. This is from Scott. You can't run from this war, soldier. Not under my command. It's like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's like, should have taken your medication. Yeah, that kind of shit. That entire section.
Rick, it's back to you.
He says it at the start. He says it at the end. Kill her! Kill that motherfucking traitor! That's an order!
They're all fucking traitors. Gook, the word gook is thrown around here.
That gets used way too much. Around.
Yeah, but it gets used in present time. It doesn't get used.
Yeah.
It was another time, you see? No, it was the 90s. You can't fucking say that anymore. But hey, you know, this is coming from the guy with the fucking ears around his neck.
Yeah.
So it's all right.
He is all ears.
This is the exchange between Brenda, the waitress, and Luke right before Hank comes out from the kitchen. Brenda, the waitress, comes out and goes, that's a lot of food you put away, boy. And he goes, it's good food. And it's just, I forgot.
He does a little smirk to the camera.
And then not in the same, like, this is the same sequence. It's the same sentence, but uttered in a different way. Like, because then Brenda the waitress calls Hank. She goes, Hank, we got a deadbeat here. Hank immediately comes out of the kitchen. He goes, hey, punk, I've been slaving all day making the slop. He goes, the food is good. Again.
Yeah.
Like, within a minute. And I fucking hey, it is.
Hey, you got enough money to pay for all this? You know, money, cash, dollars, dinero. We got ourselves a deadbeat back here.
What?
He can't pay.
Brenda. Hey, punk. I've been slaving all day making that slop.
That food is good.
Fucking it is. The question is, how are you going to pay for it?
I should have seen. I don't know.
You don't know. Ain't that cute? I'm gonna bust your head, punk.
I don't want to hurt you.
Me? You don't hurt Hank?
And then, you know, fucking diner brawl, which is pretty funny.
Roadhouse happens. Yeah. It's like another reference.
It is. But I have to attribute this type of mannerism in this trope to Alex in Clockwork Orange. There's a bit where there's like a naivete coming out from a character who was despicable, which is Alex in Clockwork Orange. He's being spoon-fed something. And I think it's right at the end of Clockwork Orange. He opens his mouth and takes a spoonful of food. Mm. He's being fed, right? He's being spoon-fed. And there's like a very childish quality coming out of this fucking maniac. And here, there's a moment in which when he's eating, Brenda, the waitress, as anger is mounting, like, why are you going to pay for this? Before he answers her, which he doesn't really, there's no dialogue, he just looks at her, but he takes a spoonful of the mashed potatoes, puts it in his mouth, and gives this really cute, childish look just before he goes to decimate everyone in the fucking place 2 minutes later. So he goes from being childlike. That's the thing as well. This character keeps going from, you know, like, Veronica, she's falling in love with him, dude.
I don't know how. She has no time to fall in love with him.
And she should be much more jaded than this, by the way. That happens very quickly. Again, man, regardless, some of the shots in this are fucking gorgeous. Why is this movie looking so good here? There's one of the sequences where he gets her a ticket, right?
Mm.
Just the juxtaposition of him being able to do that after he's been iced literally for 25 years. You know, and that's tonally, the movie also makes very little sense because of this, because he doesn't understand modern society, and yet again he gets her a ticket, right? Mm. So he gives her the ticket. She goes behind the bus. The bus goes by. It's actually very cleverly put together. And there's like a semi crane shot or whatever it is, the camera's behind her and you see this sea of cops waiting for her. And it's a quintessentially 1986, 1985 shot. That's why I thought this movie feels, you know what it reminded me of? All the trucks, the chasing these big vehicles. It just reminded me of something that came out very underrated Some people may have not liked it. I adored it. I don't know why. It has Dan Stevens in it. It's called The Guest. The Guest is a love letter to this era, but not in this era, the era that we're talking about. Like between 84 and 1990 or 1989, there was a lot of action movies that had this quality. And it's hard to recreate. So they did this in some of the sequences. You can really... There's some of the trucks chasing sequences in The Guest are very reminiscent of this. And I think that movie was kind of riffing on this as well, because it was paying tribute to everything. I don't know.
I've got a 20-second clip. I was going to send it in the group, but I'm going to just play it now.
Rob is a big guy, and I'm also a big guy, you know? So when a big guy touch a big guy and the other big guy get nervous, the big guy hands go crazy. But I mean, it was good kick. I want Dolph to hit me good. I ask him. So all this we choreograph, we talk together, and when we start to touch each other, we start to feel each other, it's like everything go fluid.
I will send you that clip, and you can take the audio from it and put it in properly. But that kind of sums up the characters in this film. That this was definitely a vehicle film. This is not a we thought about the characters really, really hard. This was, we got Jean-Claude Van Damme, and he just wants to fool around in the desert with us. Cool, let's just fool around in the desert with Jean-Claude Van Damme, you know. And that interview pretty much sums up his... And that was a interview probably recorded 10 or 15 years after the fact. So he's probably drunk, but...
Well, he had a
fierce cocaine
addiction.
And another thing I would also say to our listeners is that if you want a very honest portrayal of why actually Jean-Claude Van Damme is a really decent person to actually keep giving money to,
watch JCVD.
There we go. Phenomenal. That's exactly movie. What I was going
to
say.
You know what? I had a friend that introduced me to that. I went, oh, what the fuck are you talking? I almost fucking cried through it.
Yeah.
There's one shot in particular that it's the camera just, it's meant to represent him dissociating, basically. It came from nowhere, that movie.
Mm.
If anyone that is listening to this hasn't seen it, don't even watch trailers, nothing, because you walk into it thinking it's touching, it's funny, it's heartfelt, it's a very, like you said, it's a very honest
and
portrayal.
It's so well made that even when it breaks the fourth wall, it's done amazingly.
Doesn't he cry in that that sequence? He's not acting, dude. No. I don't think that's acting.
Because he's honestly talking about his life. And he's honestly talking about when he hit rock bottom and how it's still taking him so long to build himself back up. And it's just funny because I always have rated JCVD as in the actor and the person. And even hearing all these reports of when I was growing up of, oh, well, you know, and even watching him in terrible films like Street Fighter, I was still like, no, it's Jean-Claude Van Damme. And
Bloodsport, dude. Bloodsport changed our eyes when we were kids. Bloodsport's the reason for a lot of kids of our generation getting the shit kicked out of them. Him and Bruce Lee are responsible for every schoolyard fight I've been in thinking I could do it.
But this also comes from a place of, it's not talked about in the film JCVD, but on one of the documentary featurettes that I have on Universal Soldiers, he actually talks about him growing up in Belgium and how, like, you know, compared to most places in the world, he grew up with very little electricity. It wasn't a built-up, it was like a village, basically. But he was the scrawny, thin kid. And he even went to do, even though he was doing karate, he was still the small kid. So he went to do ballet as well. Mm-hmm. So he could do those higher kicks and do those bigger stretches. And he's just always been on the back foot. His whole life has been on the back foot, which is amazing for an action hero star that is still in our zeitgeist. In comparison to Dolph Lundgren, who went to university for chemical engineering.
Yeah, his PhD. He also had a pretty hardcore life, dude.
Yeah.
But then again, he's a very experienced martial artist.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, like, everything. Bushido.
You know, these guys all have, akin to one another, several divorces. you could argue that The Expendables is about divorcees.
Needing
turning
a day
to
job.
Mercenaries so that they disappear. They don't have just to fucking pay alimony. Paycheck. You know what I mean? Like,
no, it's the opposite, man. They need that. They need that
they,
film
well,
to succeed.
Actually, yes, that's the. How much are you paying in child support? Yeah, come on, you're in the next movie.
Terry Crews, I know you're the only married person here in a happy marriage, but please, like, you know, promote the film.
Mate, if you put them all together, they're a fucking car crash. Everyone, it's called The Expendables for a reason, right? But every single one of these guys were legends, and they hit the ceiling, they hit the bottom, just, it's, yeah, and bounced between the two.
Bounced.
You could argue.
But the one thing that they all have, and they all still have, is that they
steroids.
But they
TRT.
Have a, you know, here comes Hulk Hogan again. They all have the fan base that wants to see them succeed. There is not a single person out there who, no matter what you hear about Arnie, whatever you hear about Sly, whatever you hear about any of these people, you're still like, oh, I'm going to watch the next film they're in, though, because that's going to be blinding. And, you know, they've got a great fan base behind them.
Yeah, they're legends. You know what? I think because they shaped formative years of three generations.
Yeah.
Mm. Easy. Yeah. That's why.
80s, 90s, 2000s, pretty much.
And believe it or not, it's not just like for us. Like if you try and get like a marginal character like Drago in Rocky IV, he was in one movie. It's super memorable. It's not just the one-liners. Like that's not easy shit to do. You try and do that today. Like, who the fuck remembers what The Rock said in, like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, no, this guy said, if he dies, he dies. No, well, actually, that's not. It sounds like Arnold, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if they tried to get Arnold.
No.
To play, that would have been.
No, because Dolph
I'm fucking
had
spending the rest of the day deep faking.
Yeah, I bet you will. But even though,
dies,
like,
dies.
Even though Arnold is a great man in stature, there's just there's something about the Swedish Dolph Lundgren he just looks menacing.
He's perfect for that.
Mm.
So but again, I'm wondering what you know. Like, are we? There's got to be a certain amount of latent homosexuality within every single one of us, because in every single one of these movies, there's gratuitous homoeroticism that it's so fucking heavy that if
like
I mean, in this movie, there are so many shots of Van Damme's ass. And I'm thinking, why though? Because this wasn't targeting a female audience.
Because of the director. The director is openly a supporter.
He is
a homosexual.
That explains this so much.
So much.
Because at the time, Jean-Claude Van Damme had it stipulated in his contract that he had to basically show his ass. Because
he wanted to show his ass?
Yeah, because he knew it would sell to a certain demographic.
It's
which
true.
One? Which demographic?
Yeah. Ah. Us.
Us or ass? I don't understand why.
A little from column A, a little from column B, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Roland Emmerich is he's out, and he's a strong supporter. He also in 20, let me just remember when this year was, but basically he did his own version of the Stonewall incident in 2015.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so
the Stonewall, the bar, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Stonewall in Sydney.
No, Stonewall in... There's a Stonewall everywhere, but...
Yeah, but you know the Stonewall in Sydney, the fucking roof came down. When I was
This incident was during the 70s.
Killed a bunch of people.
This was during the 70s where cops descended on a New York gay bar and...
There you go. But there was a famous bar called the Stonewall, and the fucking ceiling came down.
Yeah.
And killed a bunch of people.
Yeah. But So his movie was about the preceding riots after a very terrible incident from the cops on the patrons of Stonewall Bar. So, but
no,
he...
That's all well and good, man. That's great. I just didn't... Now it makes perfect sense, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, and just think, it was... I'm not sure, I've got to research it, but I'm not sure if he was out in 92, but hey, you know, he got to, like, film people half naked getting injected. I mean...
Yep.
There's so much injecting in this.
So much.
In several different ways, by the way. big fuck-off syringes as well, with big needles. Big needles. There's a lot of penetration.
I mean, it does make sense now that he did the 98 Godzilla, so, you know.
Yeah.
Was a role in America as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Remember,
Jesus Christ,
this is only his second proper movie, because he was Moon 44 before that, wasn't it?
What?
Yep.
Yeah, Moon 44.
The fuck is Moon 44?
Oh, my God. It. You've never seen Moon 44?
I just said I didn't see it. What's the movie about?
It's a dystopian sci-fi movie, which, like, really low budget.
Have you seen? Are you stalling, mate? Have you seen the movie? What's it about?
I can't remember exactly. Oh, I saw it a long time ago.
Why did you just chastise me?
I mean, like, I remember it being the practical effects, because it's all miniatures.
But I asked you what the movie was about. What's the movie about?
I can't remember what the fucking movie's about.
Just, is it about 43 moons and this particular like movie tells the tale of Moon 44?
But it's the one...
Earth's mineral resources are drained. There's space fights for the last deposits on the other planets and satellites. This is a situation when one of the... You know what? I should have done this.
Total Recall. That's Total Recall.
Yeah, basically. Yeah but Total Recall is a fantasy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. As in, it's not real. It's like, you know, it's the fantasy
that gets
boosted.
As opposed to Moon 44, what the fuck are you talking about?
No, Moon 44, you know, you're meant to believe that it's all really happening, whereas Total Recall, the whole question is like, was it the program or did it really happen? Yeah.
Understood.
No, I wasn't saying, like, it's a documentary, Moon 44.
About the 44 moon.
We're on Saturn, and that is Moon 43. But let me tell you about Moon 44.
It's 2 a.m., you're in somebody's kitchen, someone comes over and goes, hey, did you hear about the 43 moons? Like, what are you talking about?
Hold this crystal under your balls.
That's oh, you piece of shit. You just reminded me of this memory locked again. Oh, you bastard. We go through my ordeal, dear listeners, about a German hippie playing a didgeridoo trying to heal me with crystals in Norway a while back.
Yeah, go listen to Tiptoes.
Yeah.
Yes, go listen to Tiptoes.
The only thing I can really remember about Moon 44 is that Malcolm McDowell was in it.
But he was.
As much as I can
he
remember.
Plays the villain,
probably
one of the majors. I think I can't remember.
Yeah. No, I'm not. You know, that's a good typecast. Like even, like I think in one of the TNG movies as well, he plays the villain. Like he's great. He's always great. You know, I don't mind him.
There isn't another actor across this film and that film and lots of other things that we watch is Leon Rippey. Who plays the doctor or the scientist who's working in the lab and has that great scene where he can't let go of a grenade for some reason. Because regardless of how his hand was, he can let go of that grenade. But anyway.
But no, it's because Dolph Lundgren starts squeezing his hand.
Oh, it's not Dolph Lundgren?
No, it's not Dolph. It's the other guy.
It's
the other guy who's called... it doesn't matter because he's not, 63. But I thought he was somebody else. Ralph Muller.
Yes.
He's GR76. And Ralph Muller, as soon as he came on screen, because you see him, he comes out of the bus, right? This is in the opening of the movie. They all come out of the bus one by one. We get Jean-Claude first, we got Dolph after him, and then we get Ralph Muller, who's taller than the two of them put together. And as soon as I saw him, I was like, hey, dude, is that the guy that played Chip? Chip who? He was Chip Shrek from Batman Returns? Because Bernieski, is that his name was?
Yeah,
but when we
Ralph,
checked,
Ralph Bianchi.
Yeah,
but anyway, no,
but
it's not
it wasn't him.
Yeah, but we've seen this guy. He's the typical beefhead, like the meathead, right? It's just a hunk of fucking flesh. He's huge guy. But I think that's why he can't release the grenade. because he puts his hand, he starts squeezing his hand, so he's trying to let go.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what it's meant to project. But when you're watching the scene, his fingers are just like daintily around, and he's acting like he can't remove. You know, the camera positioning was so bad.
He's acting in a movie.
Oh, can you believe he's acting in a movie? But what I mean is like the camera position was so bad that you could see that his grip could easily have been like, boop, and I'm out.
Those sequences inside, because there's a lack of lighting. It's very cramped in there. It's a weird set trying to replicate this lab/truck. Saw Transformers.
Oh, it's another beautiful movie truck.
Beautiful truck.
But this was evocative of something that came out much later. That I think it was Brookmeyer. Like, you know, the Transformer movies from the early 2000s or whatever. That's
series of movies. You mean, sorry, not
the one with Turturro playing Boom the fucking jail at the end. There you go.
Bay.
He's very akin. Michael Bay's style, movie style, is very akin to Ronald Emmerich.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue, right?
Oh, yeah.
And those. Yeah, I started, like, don't tell me that Over the Top was actually directed by Ronald Emmerich as well.
It wasn't.
No.
Check. Because it must have been Carolco as well, right? Must have been Carolco.
It's got to be Carolco.
It's got to be. But anyway, there was similarities. Like the facility in the desert or whatever, or these dams in the middle of nowhere. That's the thing that Michael Bay likes to use.
Mm.
You know, these disused facilities. I don't know. It just, even the color palette was quite similar. The sands and, I don't know, beige and green and military camo. Every single one of their movies somehow is populated by this color palette. Mm. I don't know what it is. But
this conversation started talking about Leon Rippey.
Yes.
And one of the things that he was amazing in was, of course, Deadwood.
Yeah, he was. And
I just have to say, Eight-Legged Freaks.
As well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's he playing in Deadwood, man?
He played Tom Nuttall. He had a big tash in that one. Huge.
What
tash.
Was his role in Deadwood, in the town?
I think he was backing up.
I've done three runs of that show. I've seen all of it three times.
Tom Nuttall was the guy who was like backing up the mayor, but wasn't the mayor.
Mm. Mm.
Like, so he was one of, I can't remember if he had a business, but I just remember he was in a lot of conversations where he was basically saying, we can't let the Chinese take over this and, you know, that sort of stuff. So...
Dude, did you know that Eric Norris, it's almost forgettable because out of all this Universal Unisols, that's what they're called, yeah. Unisols, right? He's the one that GR86. GR86 is Eric Norris. It's a NASCAR driver.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I'll raise you another one. We can't forget about Tom Lister Jr.
Oh, mate. Who was Tommy in Tiny Lisa.
Yeah.
You know, he died. I think he died.
2020.
I think he had a heart attack.
Mm.
He was a big guy, man.
Yeah.
He had that fucked up eye, didn't he?
Yeah. It's why he was so memorable in so many films, because you're like, oh, yeah, that guy from No Holds Barred, yeah.
Although it's easy to confuse him with...
We got confused with...
Because they had similar roles because of the build, yeah. What's his name from The Green Mile?
Very
similar character.
He's got three names. What's his name?
Don't look.
I'm looking. I don't care.
No, why?
I can't remember.
I'll give you a clue. I'll give you the first letter, and then it's M. Three names, M. He was also in the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes.
Michael?
Yes. Keep going. Cool. God, I feel like Michael? I'm at school right now. C-L. Michael.
Give me the second.
Clark.
Michael Clark.
Dun.
What is it?
It's Michael Clark Duncan.
There you go.
Who's also passed as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tommy Lister, he's dead?
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. While watching the movie, I don't even know why Steve decided to do this, but all of a sudden he grabs my attention by going, hey man, you can buy one of the uniforms at an auction.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I was
okay.
Like,
how much is it? How much is it? Like, we have the fucking money,
man,
we would buy
sold.
It. But was it GR55?
68.
Ah, so yeah. The NASCAR. So, because
yeah.
Tommy Lister was GR55, I think.
Tiny Lister in Jackie Brown. Yeah.
Yes, he
which is. Where I remind.
Where you remember him from.
Yeah.
Which was it? GR86, you said? No.
GR68. I think it was.
68? There's no GR68.
Okay. Maybe I was just wrong.
Because GR86.
86, maybe.
It's got to be 86, right?
Yeah.
Who's okay. GR86? Which one?
Eric Norris, the NASCAR guy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's
so, hi guys.
Ali Walker. Ali Walker, aka, is that Alicia Silverstone? I spent most
is that,
of the fucking.
Is that like, Anna Gunn?
Yeah. Dude. I spent the first 20 minutes going, what the fuck? They must have destroyed each other's career.
But careers. Her voice was way too smoky and sexy. Hey guys, how's it going? Do you want a 10-star even review?
Go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Spader.
This is a positive or a negative?
Well, that's the thing. Do you want high praise or do you want...
High praise, man.
High praise. Let's go for high praise.
10 out of 10. Max your life. They say all soldiers never die, but in the case of Universal Soldiers from JCVD, old soldiers could just be soldiers. Rampage with a necklace made of ears who want to die, immerse, and get ready was... thinking. I don't think that sentence even made sense. There is nothing more for me. I have lost the will to live. Simply nothing more to give. There is nothing more for me. Need to the end to set me free. JCVD, a gifted soldier, supervisor, commercial director from Undercover, from Dmitry Mitrovsky. I think this guy was just selling his own company. His name is Lazermatnisvliv. And this was in September the 8th, 2024.
It sounds like a very informational and educational suicide letter.
It actually feels more like he wrote it in one language and got ChatGPT to translate it. Back in
when was it released, this one?
September the 8th, 2024.
But I think he's trying to be witty.
I think so, but he's not, because when you read... I only gave you
well,
two...
Well, he probably is, but it's just the ChatGPT fact is... Fuck
yeah,
this point.
Could be.
Completely.
Here's
what's
another
his name
one.
Again? Sergey? What's his name?
Yeah. Sergey.
Is it Sergey?
No, it's...
Sergey or Sergey?
No, it's... Sergey. Lakizarmatneslev.
Oh, my, you're going to have a stroke.
Yeah,
a stroke.
Because there's a lot
clock,
of...
the Ku Klux Klan.
The Ku Klux Klan. And finally, I will give you Howell 2890 because, you know, we know that... English is his first language, I'm afraid. Universal Soldier is a different movie. It is categorized as a genre of sci-fi, but I don't care what it is. This movie kicks butt. When I first saw it, the first thing I thought was, I know that this movie will be around for a long time. Here it is 9 years later. If you don't like sci-fi or action thrillers, then watch it to see the great performance that Jean-Claude Van Damme gives. Good food is how it ends. Howell, 2890, October 26, 2001.
Oh, my God. I don't know why it just popped into my head. I read something on social media the other day. It was a comment, somebody's comment, and it was a picture of Sebastian Stan, and it's ruined. Everything is ruined. Everything is ruined now because someone said, every time I look at Sebastian Stan, I see a full-size Peter Dinklage. And that's what I'm thinking about. I swear to you, just fucking bring up a photo. Bring up a photo of Sebastian Stan.
I want to see Sebastian Stan be a French communist at a party doing coke.
Guys, we are an hour in. I mean, Steve, did you recognize any of the guns in this?
Obviously the Vietnam era ones, which were perfect because obviously that's what they do. So the Heckler Koshes, which are used by the Unisols, which are the SP-88s, I think, the M-44s, which M-144. Do you know when you just have somebody drops it and you just go...
Are you asking ChatGPT?
Desert Eagle.
That's okay.
Desert Eagle. Just say Desert Eagle.
It's not a Desert Eagle.
There isn't a single Desert Eagle in this.
No,
but mentioned. He goes like, oh, there's a Desert Eagle.
Can I just say, Dolph Lundgren, even if his dialogue is shit, his delivery with, you know, fucking arms wide open in the supermarket, in the deli section.
That entire section is perfect.
In the background, I was waiting for Mickey Rourke as the wrestler to come out with a piece of ham so that he could slice a piece of ham and cut his finger behind him. Stuff. Another expandable. Another expandable. Another divorcee. It just... I actually like that sequence. I like the...
The thing I like the most about that sequence, though, is he starts off with being like, my whole squadron's dropping like flies.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of we don't fuck around kind of deaths in it. You know, it's gratuitous, but you may hesitate at the beginning thinking he's not going to do that. But this guy shoots people in the head. He shoots people in the head willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. So... And in fact, he even tries to do that for the last time in this one, but he runs out of bullets, right?
Yeah.
That's the moment when he gazes at the gun going, oh,
it's out of bullets.
It's out of bullets. He tries to be funny at the end of this, and somehow he is. It's just weird, dude. Yeah. But Steve noticed that, you know, the machine, the Fargo machine, at the end of
Jesus
this? Yeah. One of the blades was made of rubber, and we saw it like going like this. We saw the wobble. We both laughed.
Oh, so if we're talking about the ending...
Is he going to tickle Dolph Lundgren at the end of this? He's going to switch it on. He's going to go...
If we're talking about the ending, I'll talk about the alternative ending. Steve, did you watch it as well?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
it's
so
quite bleak.
So it starts off in the kitchen where he's being called out by Dolph Lundgren, right? He goes to open up the door and his mum's standing there and she gets executed in front of him straight away. Bam. Right, even before he's walked out. Yeah. And then afterwards you get pretty much the same. She runs away, the grenade gets thrown at her, Dolph Lundgren does a yeah to the camera, which is amazing. And then they don't go into the barn at all. He gets the crap kicked out of him and he goes onto the harvester machine. Right? Then he goes to the girl, checks if she's alive, she is alive. And then he turns around and his dad's standing there. Dad kills him with a shotgun. Like, shoots at him with a shotgun. And then the doctor drives up with, like, all the men in black or whatever the hell they are. There's just a whole load of suits with guns and all that stuff. And they start shooting at him and say, we had to do this to get you both in the same place. And they start shooting at him. And just when you think he's just going to die... The police and the press turn up. This is like Lord of the Rings. There are so many endings. The police and the press turn up, and she's like crying over his body. They arrest the doctor and his Men in Black team, and then give her a microphone and say, "Right, we're going live. So can you report about what you've done?"
Quite literally, straight in.
Gives her a camera, and then you're watching it from the camera's point of view, and it's got a little record on the corner of the screen, and she's like, "This is Veronica," and I can't do this right now. Drops the mic, falls to his body, and the cameraman follows it, and so he's like, you're seeing Jean-Claude Van Damme choking up blood, and he somehow gets saved.
His body,
his
body does the saving.
Yeah, so he then goes and by the way, that wasn't his real mum and dad. That was a fake mum and dad just to get them all on the scene. And his real mum and dad are like somewhere else or whatever it is. And at the end, there's a voiceover, and it's all very on Golden Pond. Like, they're walking by a lake, and it's like, it's been, when he came out of hospital, we spent 2 months where he met his real mum and dad, and I spent 2 months with him, and he didn't want any more saving and all of this stuff, and he died naturally with all, and it's a massive voiceover.
Yeah. By Veronica.
By Veronica, by the Walker. Pond.
it's a Hallmark movie now.
It's great.
It's a good ending.
If they kept that ending, I would actually say this movie is so bad it's good.
She also, character also reminded me of Sarah Connor. That's also like, yeah, it's obvious. It's a bit, because Dolph Lundgren was the standout for me in this at times. Like, yes. There's a lot of Mad Max nods, well, tropes. They're just so much plagiarism in this movie, but because it's such a hodgepodge, you can't pinpoint what it's copying. You know what I mean? By this stage, I think the guy that was driving the truck is already dead. So I don't know how the fuck Dolph Lundgren is kind of controlling this huge gargantuan vehicle, and at the same time, has the time to stick half of his body out of the cab and toss grenades like a video game villain, like a final boss. Oh my God, final boss. We are in the throes, by the way. We're in the throes of the fucking Ibiza final boss. This movie is probably his favorite movie.
Jack here. Get the north. Get the north. Final boss.
And as he's doing this, as he's tossing grenades forward, by the way, which is so fucking stupid, because why would you do that? You would throw them like bananas in Mario Kart. You would throw them behind you. No, you wouldn't throw them forward. Like,
while driving into the explosions.
Yeah, wow. He's hanging out with half of his body out, and he's going, are we having fun yet? He reminded me of Adam Scott in Party Down. You know how the guy... Yeah. Are we having fun yet? And it just reminded me of... It's just me and you, John. In Commando, you know, like there's a lot of that shit in this, man.
I mean, he tears up every single scene he's in.
He does. Yeah, he does.
He
looked good on camera, dude. Like, yeah. if there's an actor that you could, and I'm not saying this lightly, all right. If there is an actor that made Sweat look good on skin, it's Dolph Lundgren. And I think we got that imprint from, I know it's a little gay what I just said, but it's all right. It's all right. It's a Roland Emmerich picture. It's fine. Do you know the glistening kind of sweat? If you look at Rocky IV, every single time he is in, well, it's not just sweat, it's oil. There's so much oil. I wonder what the oil budget was on the Rocky movies, but particularly in Rocky IV, it's, you know,
it's ludicrous.
Yeah.
Well, when we look at the ice budget on this one.
Yeah, what happened to the didification? The didification of action here, the stars. What happened to that? Because there was a 10-year of glistening sweat. Everyone, no matter what, like even the first Die Hard didn't have as much. But
it's now receded hairlines or bald heads. That's what it is, and they can't get enough to slap on the top of Jason Statham.
What did you say?
We can't get enough to cover Jason Statham all the time on his glistening dome.
No. But he doesn't go full shape, right? He's got a bit of fuzz.
Oh, yeah, he does. Fuzz
on. Yeah, to avoid the shine, I think. While The Rock embraced it. Like, it's just he wants to shine.
Oh.
Okay. And you know how many sequels are out there?
There's 8. Yeah. Technically, there's 3 timelines. There's the directed DVD versions, which were 2 extra films, which were 2022. Sorry, not 2022. Filmed roughly around about the same time as this was released, so 1993, 1994, whatever it was. But they were terrible. Let's just say terrible.
How can you? But one of them had Goldberg in it from WCW and WWE. I mean, come on.
So, they're not the directed DVD movies.
Yeah, but look, man, one of the sequels, the John Hyams one, is the one that came out in 2012. And there's no way with the amount of time that we actually lack from our life, I'm not going to fucking go our lives collectively. We're all super busy for one reason or another, including you, they listening to this. You're super busy, so don't fucking waste your time watching this. but we're talking about the 2012, one of the sequels of Universal Soldier, which probably is chapter 7 or 8, in which Dolph Lundgren is back.
Yeah.
He went through a fucking wood because I think they took a different direction. Now it's about cloning, right?
Yeah. But it's also a different timeline. It was a different timeline. It was a different time.
It was a different timeline, you see? But anyway.
Is that Day of Reckoning?
Yeah. In all these universes, this movie still sucked, though. That's what they have in common.
Yeah, it was terrible. But it does got Scott Atkins.
Scott Atkins, yes. It's got Dolph Lundgren. It's got a bunch of other people in it. But yeah, I don't know. I associate these movies with washed out alimony. Like we said earlier, you know, I got to pay for a lot of stuff for the lifestyle that I cannot sustain anymore. And I may keep making pieces of shit. And I don't, you know, I don't judge them. You still got to work as an actor. But I don't know. It's difficult to find anything that is not devoid of artistic value. Very difficult. Should we get to ratings?
Yes, please.
Please, let's do this. We're all on the same...
on the same page.
Yeah.
We're on the same page.
I mean, heavily dated movie. Yeah. I'm just going to say this from my perspective. I enjoy it. It's cheese on a stick. It's heavily dated. There are some great action scenes, but it doesn't make it a good movie anymore. And
anymore, this is a okay.
You know what I mean. It's not the I'm not 17 sitting in a sitting like watching it on DVD or VHS. Mm. You know, with my mate Chris Wheel. Which Chris, if you're listening to this, you still don't look like Jean-Claude Van Damme. Give up.
Fuck, you said publicly to him.
And happy 50th this year, Chris. Woo!
Yeah. Oh, he's actually 50. Yeah, just before me. Yeah, so.
What was the 50-something quote in this movie that closes?
There's two of them. The last one being, how do you feel? I feel 50, which was at the end of the movie.
Right.
And you look good. For 50.
Yeah.
Fade to black. That's how the movie ends, I think.
Yeah. The first quote is how it faded to black. Like, how do you feel? I feel like I'm 50. And then it fades to black. Yeah, but that previous black. One is her being like, hey, at least you don't look 50.
So, your score.
Wing.
Your score, Steve.
It's a 3.0. That's it. 3.0. And it's 3.0. Soldiers on fire.
Yeah, oh, Jesus. They all like are wandering around like they just found out they're adopted. Every single one of them.
It was so well done.
Fuck. Okay, I'll go next. I picked this. I think, you know, I'm seeking a palate cleanse every once in a while. We can't always, like, we're going to do this, I think, quite often. We're going to do something good and do something dog shit that we thought was good at some point. I think, you know, we're not just going to do bad stuff just for the sake of that. But I don't even think there was much nostalgia here. I think it was forgettable back then as well. But the draw was Jean-Claude Van Damme. This is at a time in which, you know, he was the living, you know, action figure. And he was kind of up there, almost up there with Arnie, with Stallone. Like, it's, you know, he had status, man. He had status as an action hero. You know, the Bruce Willis, the what Jean-Claude Van Damme is, you know, you got to give him credit. Again, for someone who wasn't, you know, born and bred in the USA and to infiltrate Hollywood to that extent, when this guy was meant to be the stunt double. He was meant to be the dude in the Predator suit. Everybody knows this factoid, but... you know, he had a stab at everything trying to get into the business, and he managed. So that's you know, that's a pretty noble feat. He was known globally, dude. This guy was a global superstar. So, and he's, you know, everybody knows who Jean-Claude Van Damme is. So that's a big one. You could argue that he's the Chuck Norris of our generation. So just because of the splits and the kicking. But,
Do you know that Chuck Norris and Jean-Claude Van Damme shared a WWF? Yep. Ring, yeah.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, there you go. With the difference that, you know, like Chuck Norris was actually a proper martial artist, and Jean-Claude, debatable, you know. But anyway, that was the persona that, you know, he was projecting, the martial artist. And he did that well. So a true action star through and through. This movie is what it is. I don't know. I don't even know if it works as a group watch. I guess some people out there are entitled to like it as long as they are 15 or below. I don't know. it's, you know, it's a simple, dated 90s action movie that is trying to be so many things because those things sold tickets. This is a 3. It's a 3 for me, and it's a 3 ice bags. That's what this is.
All right. Well, look, I've tried really hard this week to kind of sit with this film and try and think, what was it like in 1992? Because, you know, me being the youngest out of all of us, I only got to see this as a rental, and then I only got to see this as being played on TV all the time. This was one of those staple films that, you know, I'll catch this halfway through, or I'll watch the bit where he goes, I'm all ears, and then I'm done, I'm okay after that. So I was looking through the 1992 list of action films, and you had stuff like Last of the Mohicans, you had Patriot Games, you had some of your terrible stuff like Stop or My Mum Will Shoot, you had Three Ninjas. But more importantly, 1992 was the year that Reservoir Dogs got released. So when you're thinking about action films and you know that Reservoir Dogs got released the same year, this was the last of your standard leave your brain behind 90s, late 80s, 90s action films. And it was about to break up and make way for the action films that completely changed the face of cinema.
Sorry to interrupt you, but you said this in another episode.
You
said that these movies are almost to be thanked because the rise of Miramax and movies like Reservoir Dogs and that movement of, you know, offbeat, off-kilter was a desire to go against the studios.
Go against the studios, right.
The status quo. So without this piece of shit, for all you know, this piece of shit is responsible for the renaissance.
But it's also, it's interesting because in the same year, you still had stuff like Kickboxer 3 or Blood Fist 3 come out. So there was, you could tell that this was a dying art of an action film. And you can tell by this film, by the fact that only 3 out of the whole cast were even trying on this film. Which is why it's so sad for me, because nostalgia glasses on, I would, or even with the alternative ending, I would have been like, so bad it's good, I'm going to at least give it a 6 because I'm going to watch it again. Mine is a 3. I will not promote this to anyone. I would not say, if you're going to watch the Jean-Claude Van Damme film, you're going to watch Universal Soldier. No. I'm going to say it was what it was. There are a few good scenes in it, but it tries too much to lean on the comedy than the action. 3 what? Let's say 3.0s, necklaces with lots of ears and police badges on a waistcoat.
That's nice. And on that note, this was Umba.
This was Steve.
And this is Ricky.
Goodbye.
Happy birthday, Steve.
Happy birthday to you.
I took her out. It was a Friday night. I woke alone to get the feeling right. We started making out and she took off my pants. But then I turned on the TV, and that's about the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23. And I saw more of you on TV shows. What the hell is ADD? My friends say I should act my age. What's my age again? What's my age again? But later on the drive home, I called her mom from a payphone. I said I was the cops and your husband's in jail. The state looks down on sodomy. And that's about the time that bitch hung up on me. Nobody likes you when you're 20.